Hi, this is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Bird on a Wire. I'm Luann Bird, your host for this podcast series, which is also hosted by Civic Media, which is 5:40 a.m. and 101 FM in the listening in our area. It's so great to have a local radio station to listen to, and I'm getting kind of addicted to it now. So, welcome. The purpose of this is when I'll go back a little bit. When I ran for, I was called a little over a year ago to run for public office, and I was pretty miserable about the state of politics. And when they called and asked me to run, they had redrawn the lines. I said, yes, I will run. And the feeling before that was like depression and anger and like just so unhappy. And then when I got involved to this level, I felt a new sense of energy. I felt like I was doing something about it. And that always feels good. And that really is the premise of my life, really. If I look back at a lot of times in my life, I've run into challenging things. And the minute I take some action, I feel so much better. So through, you know, when the campaign ended, we thought podcasts would be a good way to continue conversations about hope, that give people hope, civility, and action. Because if you have hope, that means there's work to do. When you feel hopeless about something, it's easy to sit around and do nothing, right? And hope means we can do something about it. So with that brief introduction, I am so happy to have as my host or my guest tonight, the beloved Mandela Barnes. I have met few people that love you like everybody loves Mandela. So thank you for coming, Mandela. Yes.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me to be on the show. Thank you for even doing the show, and thank you for running. It's not easy to put yourself out there. You're a first-time candidate, and you had a strong campaign. You had a good message. People responded very well to you. You showed up in places where they didn't expect a lot of Democrats to show up. So just want to express my appreciation to you for everything that you put in, everything that you're continuing to do. So I am excited to be here, and we had a bird call right behind us. So
I know.
We should appreciate the moment.
They're part of the show.
Yeah, they're part of the show.
No relative, by the way, just friends. So you ran too, and boy, I've just admired your work for a long time. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what's led you to that point? And what we really want to talk about is voting. And I think that's what you're currently doing, so we're going to want to hear a lot about that.
Absolutely. So I really, you know, have enjoyed my time being involved in politics, whether it is serving in elected office or being on the organizing side of things like I am right now. Just really getting back to my roots. I started as a grassroots organizer, and I am back in to the grassroots side of things. I don't think I ever really left, but now I have an amazing opportunity with an organization called Power to the Polls, where I'm honored to serve as the president of the organization. And we're focused on making sure we turn out voters. And I don't want to say that we're simply a voter turnout organization, because it's so much more than that. This is about building community. It's about building organization. It is about building lasting infrastructure all throughout the city of Milwaukee and beyond. This last spring, we ran a program in Milwaukee, in Green Bay, and Racine. We were able to help reelect the mayors of Green Bay and Racine, and we were also able to help boost turnout in the city of Milwaukee to help propel now Justice Janet Protasiewicz to victory. It has been an amazing time with some amazing people. It's a labor, faith, and civil rights coalition. Prior to serving in the state assembly, I worked for an interfaith organization where I helped build coalition. And getting back to my roots doing that brings me a whole lot of joy and a real sense of fulfillment. Knowing what's at hand next year to re-elect President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris against whoever the Republican is. Right now, it's looking like it's going to be Donald Trump. If you were to look at the numbers, even though he is thrice indicted, Republicans are still clamoring to their hero, I should say. But it just shows what a very sad state they're in right now, that this is the person that they're willing to bet all their chips on. So with that being said, even if it's not Donald Trump, we know it's not going to be anybody who will be any better. There will be a person who will try like hell to fill the void, will try to do whatever they can to come across as even more extreme than he was as president. So that's why we got to show up everywhere. We got to organize in communities all across the state. We have to make sure that turnout in Milwaukee County is just like turnout in Dane County. And that is a gargantuan task, I'll tell you.
It's a big goal.
Dane County turnout has been so impressive, but we shouldn't settle for anything less. If we can do it there, we should be able to do it anywhere. And that's the work that we want to do. And not to say that it'll happen in the next cycle, but that's what we should all be working towards.
Well, I don't know. If I could flip Hale's Corners to Janet, anything's possible, really, because I never knew we could do that. But you, tell me, how do you do this work? How do you reach people? What's working for you?
Yes.
And what's not?
Mm-hmm. So one thing I like to say is that you don't solve the turnout problem just by knocking on doors alone. It takes to sustain year-round engagement. People get frustrated when you only show up asking them to vote, especially when people feel as if elected leaders or politicians aren't doing anything for them, regardless of party. But right now, we have the remarkable opportunity to remind people what has been happening, the historic investments of the Biden-Harris administration, be it the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the most significant, substantial piece of legislation to combat climate change in the history of this country in terms of investments in renewable energy, whether it is the historic infrastructure law that is going to create jobs, that is already creating jobs here in Wisconsin.
So you're out talking to people, knocking on doors right now?
So we are going to be knocking on the doors in the next, we're going to be knocking on doors in the next couple weeks, actually.
Okay.
So showing up now, talking to people about what is actually on their minds is what we want to do, even, you know, in a non-election year, because it's important that people can at least feel as if their voices are being heard, because their voices should be heard. And if we can show up and talk to people, have casual conversations, but most importantly, candid conversations, it helps to get a real pulse of, the community, to really figure out, what is ticking, like what is making a person decide to either vote for our candidate, vote against our candidate, or not show up at all, and gives us a little more time to help solve those problems, and also an opportunity to engage in deeper and more prolonged conversation to dispel myths, to dispel rumors, and to help stop the flow of disinformation.
One thing I found when I knocked on doors, was that there was a lot of commonality in values. Most people value safe communities. Mm-hmm. Most people really do value a woman's right to privacy and her healthcare choices. Most people do. That a lot of people would just come out with ban assault rifles while I was knocking on doors. I didn't even ask. They would just say that. And so the interesting part about that is if you listen to what people care about, I think it's less about the party and more about how can we work together to get this stuff done? Isn't that what organizing is about? It isn't just about voting, right?
Well, exactly. It's about building community. And not only are we on the right side of policy, the right side of justice, we're also on the right side of history. Unfortunately, legislative maps in Wisconsin, which are now being officially challenged in the state Supreme Court.
For our listeners, we're all feeling good about
that today. We are feeling really good about the opportunities we have to actually restore our democracy, because the voice of the people is not being truly represented with what we have now, with these rigged maps that give preference to a party that did not rightfully secure that majority. So with that being said, things have been tough for quite some time, since 2011, when the previous gerrymandering took place. It has been a long time. I got elected to the assembly in 2012. I served there. I felt like it was a place where good ideas went to die. But if we get true justice with this common sense majority we have in the Supreme Court right now, things could look a lot different. We can truly have laws that reflect the will of the people. We can truly see so many of the issues that are important to a majority of Wisconsinites, be it common sense gun reform, be it finally expanding our Medicaid program, expansion of Badger Care. We're like one of 10 states now that has yet to do it. Or even a woman's right to choose, or even legalization of marijuana. Like, the list goes on and on and on. Like, all the things that people have been looking for, people have been waiting for, that has been denied to them by a legislature that not truly or rightfully earn their power has been egregious for the last 12 years. But a new day is potentially upon us here in the state.
I think that's that sense of hopelessness a lot of people feel. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so rigged, why should I even care? So what is it that you would tell someone who feels that way in the city of Milwaukee? You knocked on their door and they are so sick of politics, they don't care. Maybe they don't know, too, by the way. What do you say to that person to get them out?
I remember a conversation I had with Gwen Moore. We may have been on a panel together with Congresswoman Gwen Moore, and somebody brought up the same question. And she said, I'll tell you like somebody told me, for people that say they don't do politics, the reality is politics will do you. And I have also had conversations with people who said that they didn't, you know, see a reason to vote. And, you know, it was a little frustrating as I was the person asking for their vote. But, you know, I would say that, look, you know, of course, I'm running for office right now, but it's not about me. Of course, I want you to vote, and I do want you to vote for me, full of transparency. But this is about you. You know, you are voting for yourself. You're voting for somebody who is near and dear to you, somebody that you care about, or somebody who cares about you. And if you let them down by not voting, or quite frankly, letting yourself down by not showing up and exercising this right that you do have, then things will only get worse for you or that person you care about, or the person who cares about you deeply.
I said the same thing when I knocked on doors. It was like, okay, the political system is broken, and everybody would agree with me on that. Mm-hmm. It's too negative. It's too divided. It's not working for us. And a lot of people that I knocked on doors felt the same way. So even some of the Republicans I ran into would, you know, they would agree with me. This is all broken, but what can you do about it, right? And then I say, well, change starts with me. I was the one that had to decide to be civil. I was the one that had to decide, I'm going to stop villainizing the other party. I'm not going to talk about my opponent at all. That's not why I'm at this door. It's not why I'm running this campaign. I want to talk about the future and the hope that we have. So I would say to the people at the door, well, you can do the same thing. Because people are so afraid to talk about politics now,
exactly.
Right? It's so negative. It's a dirty word. And if we can get beyond that,
exactly, and if people are frustrated,
help them get comfortable. Sorry.
No, you're fine. And like, the thing about it is, people who are frustrated, the most, the thing they can do about mm-hmm. it is to show up. And that's step one. After you step up, you organize.
Right.
And another thing I tell people too is, like, voting is just the first step. Of course, you should vote in every election, but don't just vote and assume the person you wanted to win is going to make everything happen overnight, because that's not how it works. And if the person you didn't want to win wins the election, you shouldn't just let them off the hook with whatever they think they can get away with. You should show up and hold people accountable, regardless of if it's the person you voted for or not. And most people feel that there's not, you know, real access to government. And I tell them, like, well, there are many ways for you to get involved and get engaged. The reality is not enough people even know their channels to reach out to their elected representatives. And we also have issues with, you know, lack of civics education, where, you know, people aren't learning this from a young age, and it feels so abstract to people. So one thing I know that you did in your campaign, one thing I certainly tried to do in my campaign, was to make politics more tangible.
Yes. And tell me something about what made you decide to run the first time for the assembly.
Yeah.
And had you served anywhere prior to that?
No, I had not served anywhere prior to that. I had worked on campaigns prior to that.
Okay. Well, what made you work on your first campaign? And what was it?
Yeah. So it was 2008, right after college. And, you know, it was the year Barack Obama was on his way to becoming president.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I had an opportunity because it was right after college. I didn't have real bills or responsibilities. So I was able to take a job that paid me $400 a week. And I got busy. I got to work. Got to work knocking on doors as a field organizer. Wow. And it was an incredible experience for me. I came back home and did an internship in Tom Barrett's office and, you know, got to meet a lot of people, and that's what led to eventually me going over to MICA. But the thing is, what motivated me to run for office the first time is honestly an answer to one of the earlier questions about people who are frustrated. I was frustrated, but I wasn't frustrated in the sense where I wasn't going to show up to vote. I felt that I knew my vote could, you know, change things, but also knew that running for office could also change things, which is something else I present to people too, that say, look, if you're that mad, run for office yourself. You know, if you disagree with everything that everybody is saying, then chances, I hope you agree with yourself on some issues, and you should try running for office, because there is nothing stopping you from doing so. And, you know, like you said, when people say they're frustrated or they feel like politics isn't working, I level with folks and I say, yeah, I agree with you. There is an office waiting for you to at least give it a go, to give it a try, because I don't think that your anger or your displeasure with the system is grounds for you to check out. In fact, I think it's more reason for you to get involved.
I do too. I go back to 33 years ago. My husband was paralyzed in a construction accident, and I was like stay-at-home mom. I was going to be PTO mom. I had no career aspirations. So for like 5 years I was kind of miserable, and the schools weren't wheelchair accessible. Our first event was up in the playground. Everybody else was downstairs. We couldn't get to the event because of his wheelchair. So it started my activism, and I figured out how to get involved in an election, kind of like you did. Same thing, school board election. I went to every candidate and said, how do you feel about handicap access, you know? And then the next time I was running and I got on that board, and that feeling of working with other people, and we passed referendums, and within the 6 years I was on the board, we got all, you know, all 22 schools in Oshkosh fixed, except one, still need an elevator. But the power that people have is what I'm trying to reach into. The power that you have on a daily basis, no matter what you're involved in, it's there, and discovering that is what really gives you a sense of, I think, purpose in life. I do think we're here to solve these problems and to help, right? And to reach out to other people.
Yeah, and it's the same conversation too when you talk about letting people know that their vote matters. I mean, I think it's even deeper than that. It's like you have a very real power and you have a choice to use it or not.
That's right. So it is about the person. And if you don't vote, how are you going to feel? If you don't get in there and call, a lot of people are concerned right now about their local school boards, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm telling them this, well, go have coffee with your school board members and talk to them. Find out where they're at. What do they care about? Are you worried about how the superintendent's running the schools? If you are, go have coffee with your, you know, local school board member. Build that relationship, because they do really work for us as a community, and government is us. It isn't a separate entity, right?
That's very true.
And that, getting, reminding people of that, is good. I had one guy really challenge me at a chamber. There's always a good story, right? You got lots too, I'm sure. And we're sitting at this table with, you know, all these people at a chamber meeting, and this guy finally pulls out the Constitution and says, he's just waving that thing at me about the government this, the government that, and I finally said, yeah, we're the government though. It says so right in that Constitution. I've read it. Yes, I've read it, and I know what it means. So you can't put that on somebody else. It's up to us to change things. And that goes back to knocking on doors. I felt like I gave everybody hope every time I walked away because of the way I approached it. I'm like, you and me together, you can either vote for Bob Donovan the same, or you can vote for change. That's who I'm going to be about. And I think that resonated too, because it's the power to those people. But getting them out to vote, like, that's a scary thing if you've never voted. I mean, really, the first time I voted, I was older. I didn't vote right when I was 18. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't raised that way. And I remember going in and just bullet voting for two people, because that's all I knew. I didn't know what a county board was. Why would I go vote for county board members, right? So you must run into that when you're
You run into it all the time where people say, well, I only vote in the big elections. Like, oh, man.
That's right. We have like a lot of that.
And I would tell people, like, look, you vote for a school board member, that's the person you're going to see in the grocery store.
Right.
You know, you're not going to see the president in the grocery store. It's like, this is where the change really happens. This is where you can actually have more influence than just the vote alone. You have an ability to actually engage these people that you have cast a ballot for or not.
So how long were you in the legislature?
Just 2 terms.
And then what happened?
You know.
This is a cool story. You just got this call or something, or this urge? What happened?
No. I didn't get discouraged.
Not
encouraged. Not at all.
Not
I was. Oh yeah,
call.
I was a little too encouraged actually. And
yeah.
Some people in the crowd. Some people in the crowd. No.
Yeah.
Got a little too encouraged, and I had a race that didn't go my way in 2016, and that gave me another opportunity to stay involved in a different form of organizing.
Which race didn't go your way in 2016?
Yeah, in 2016 I ran for state senate actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and so. I ended up going to work for an organization that trained progressive state legislators around the country. So I got to help, you know, with policy development, message development, and it was just a great opportunity to bring, you know, national attention to the state level, to state level leaders, I should say, to state legislatures, especially given the fact that there was a renewed importance with Donald Trump being president. And, you know, these were people who were pushing back against all sorts of, you know, Donald Trump era policies, but doing it at the state level. So that was an amazing time for me. It was a great experience, met so many people. Also got a whole lot of ideas. And then I came back, or I never left, so I can't say I came back, but I ran for lieutenant governor.
Yeah, what were some of your ideas you got?
So, like, some of the things people were doing, like, you know, there were legislators who decided that, you know, they wouldn't do business with companies that wanted to bid on Donald Trump's wall, like, to, you know, stuff like that, or states that were figuring out innovative ways to do you know, Medicaid expansion or even public options for their Medicaid programs, new renewable energy goals, you know, changing the way that, you know, changing the way that, you know, state legislators even were involved with the federal government. So, yeah, it was great. Met a lot of incredible leaders, some who are still fighting a good fight in state houses across the country. Number of them have gone on to Congress. A number of them have become governors, like Katie Hobbs in Arizona, who I consider to be a good friend. Number of you know, members of Congress now. So it was great. And the thing is, a lot of these people were fighting very similar fights in their respective states. And because of that, like, it's great to be able to build coalition, to be able to talk to people who are going through similar things. There were states that were even more challenging politically than Wisconsin, right? We had, you know, people who were coming from Alabama, Mississippi, just because, you know, they just needed to be in solidarity with somebody. And so they'd be at come to the conference and, you know, get some ideas, take them home. It may be tough, but what's important is that you show up to fight, and it goes back to making sure that the people in your respective jurisdiction, you know, have something to believe in, have this idea or understanding that somebody is going to show up and fight for them.
That's a good point. Something to believe in, because I think if we elevate beliefs, that also spurs the hope and the action piece. Because if you don't believe, things will change. Gun violence came into my life recently, and it was a podcast I did with a Dr. Catherine Wilkinson, where she challenged my own thinking on that. Because if I didn't believe we could actually pass gun control legislation, why would I try? So isn't there an element of truth to that? Like, we've got to get people to believe that things can change.
Well, absolutely. And you mentioned, like, the commonality, and the commonality that you experience on the doors, it expands far beyond that. Like, there's so much more we have in common, like, all across this state, all across the country. And one of the things we need to do a better job of is building urban-rural coalition, talking about those things that matter. Sure enough, you know, just there are going to be differences. That's just the way life is. We have differences with our own family members, so we can't just expect to share every level of understanding with everybody in this state and everybody in this country. This is not realistic to think that. However, there are so many things that we do have in common, things that we do share, things that are important to us. And I repeated all the time on the campaign trail, people want good schools, people want to go to a doctor, not worry about a surprise bill. People want to feel safe and have good jobs in their communities. One job that pays the bills, that should be enough.
Bird on a Wire podcast will be right back.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Well, it's so you've been involved almost your entire life since college. Were you involved before that? Were you raised in a political family that was
political enough?
Voting and out there talking about politics.
Political enough. My parents voted every election. My dad would take me, you know, whenever he was picking or whoever picked me up from school, and depending on what time I went to vote. And my dad, I would always talk about the fact that my dad would make me get a sample ballot when I was young, just to be familiar with names and the process. So
that's cool. And, now, not everybody gets that experience.
Both parents.
Good idea for parents out there.
Very, very active in their respective unions as well. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So that gave you a base. So then, what was it? How did you get to run for lieutenant governor? Did someone call you, or did you just see it and you knew you wanted it? How did that go?
So it was, I was thinking about, during my time working for the organization that I was working for, I didn't intend to run for the state legislature again. Although, it was presented to me. Somebody asked if I would be interested in doing so. And I didn't necessarily want to. I knew that it would be very difficult to flip our state legislature given the maps. I knew that with Donald Trump as president, it would be more likely that we could flip the governor's mansion instead of the state legislature. And knew I wasn't ready to run for governor, and so I decided to run for lieutenant governor.
Cool.
Yep.
And that was great.
It was a great experience. One of the best experiences of my life. The campaign and the 4 years serving in office. Just getting to travel the entire state every week. It was almost like a different field trip. Just being a different place in Wisconsin. Just experiencing literally everything the state has to offer. So, one of the best decisions I made. Sir.
Well, wouldn't you say that all of your background sure prepared you for the U.S. Senate? And we're all disappointed that you did not make that. Tell us a little about that race. You still gave a lot of people hope.
I appreciate that. And look, honestly, even running for U.S. Senate, although didn't get the result that I wanted, it was still an amazing experience. It was an opportunity to show up in even more parts of the state, have even more complex conversations, have even deeper dialogue with people. And, sometimes people ask, you had to give up your seat as lieutenant governor. And it's like, would you do it again? And knowing the outcome of this race, if given the opportunity to do it again, I still would.
That's right, because it was important.
Just because it was a race that I absolutely believe was worth running. And, can say that I put it all out there, did everything I possibly could. We set new fundraising records. We were able to organize and build coalition in an entirely new way. A lot of different groups have popped up as a result. I still am just in awe of the work of Moms for Mandela, which is now Motherhood for Good, and you mentioned school boards, and you look at groups like Moms for Liberty and the havoc that they're wreaking across the country on school boards. And, you know, we have an opportunity to push back with some progressive mothers who are not backing down from a challenge. The students for Mandela group.
That's right.
The seniors for Mandela.
That's right.
You know,
so many groups,
and you know, it was those folks that gave me hope, honestly, during the campaign, because it was incredibly challenging.
Yeah.
Just a lot of long days, long nights. But you know, at the same time, it was one of the most fulfilling experiences that I've ever had.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Mm-hmm. I still have contacts with the people I met at the doors, and they still have expectations and questions and reach out to me when they're struggling with issues. Recently, mm-hmm. a school board issue came up, and it had to do with staffing for kids with disabilities. And this one mom I met has a child with a disability in that system. It's in my system. And so you can bet I got on the phone and I called the school board members that I know, including the president, and said, you know what you just did? You know, because they wouldn't approve the staffing. And that's going to have a negative effect on this mom I know. So you build relationships, right? And then we have to keep being a voice for mm-hmm. them sometimes, or teaching them how they can take action, because it is all about relationships. And I love all the little groups, big groups. They're turning into big groups that are organizing out there to create change, because isn't that what it's all about?
It's exactly what it's all about. And you know, I'm still traveling the state now, whether it's the work with Power to Polls or the Long Run, which is the political action committee that
tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Long Run's political action committee I started shortly after the campaign, just because the work that we were able to do, the coalition we were able to build, the momentum we had, you know, a lot of this lives and dies with the campaign cycle. We wanted this to be different. I said that from the very start. We want this to be different. And so all the organizing we were able to do, I wanted it to be able to still live somewhere, have some impact, even if it's for someone other than myself. And we've been supporting, or we just recently announced a slate of candidates all across the country. We were very active in the Supreme Court race, raised a lot of money for now Justice Janet, you know, have been already incredibly supportive of Tammy Baldwin in her reelection. And we look to announce some more candidates coming up real soon. But right now we got people like Ruben Gallego, who's running against Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona, one of the first people we endorse. We endorse Colin Allred, who's running against Ted Cruz in Texas. And, you know, list goes on. Some incredible people running for Congress, like Sarah Cleehood, Josh Riley, Will Rollins. And there are people who are running some tough races, but they're winnable races. And a lot of the candidates are immediately counted out for whatever reason. And so we want to be able to help those candidates who may have a tougher time getting off the ground because of demographic factors, be it race, be it gender, be it age, be it status as a working class candidate. And, you know, these are people with a real message. These are people with real world lived experiences. And it's those real world experiences that should be respected. I remember in 2018, when we elected the most diverse Congress in the nation's history, up until that point, a lot of the rhetoric was, you know, these are unlikely candidates. But it's like, well, these are likely Americans. These are the people you're probably going to see every day. So why shouldn't the people who are most represented in our society, why should they not be in the highest representative bodies of our government? It's kind of foolish that, you know, we look at it that way, as if, you know, we should be represented or led by, you know, some House of Lords, right? It's just not, that's not who we are. It's not what we should be.
So what I'm not hearing you talk about are all this negative stuff about other people and the other, I'm not hearing you talk, and I don't talk that way either. We talk about the hope and the future and getting more people involved, right?
I just got a lot more stuff to talk about than that. That's the thing,
me
right?
Too.
Like in these, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff to talk about. And, you know, when the time is right, of course, you hold people to account, you talk about those things, but at the same time, it's like, you know, too often people have to wonder what you stand for, and that shouldn't be the case if you are the candidate.
Right. That's right. One thing, again, you and I did the same. I did not run negative ads against my opponent.
Oh, we ran some.
But not...
Sorry. We spent a lot.
I can't believe you did that.
Of course.
I think it was unbalanced. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I think it was unbalanced in both of our races. And do you think that had a major effect?
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you look at the outside spending disparity, like, you know, that's... another issue, big money in politics. Like, it was the outside groups that outspent us by $26 million. So when you talk about, you know, lopsided candidate to candidate, I raise more money than my opponent, but when you have a league of billionaires that are ready,
that's right,
to
we can't control that,
to wrangle this democracy in the interests of their own selves, then that's what you end up with.
Well,
it's outside spending. Like, it's like you think about, you know, the lump sums that get poured into these races as if it's nothing. Like, we'll just look at just the number 26 million, right? This is, you know, this is a neighborhood's lifetime of earning, right? And people can just so easily put it into campaigns because they want to protect status quo. They want people who are going to make sure that taxes are forever cut for the most wealthy individuals while working class people bear the burden.
Yeah. Yeah. How can we do more for people that are underserved? I think that's what you're about. I think that's what I'm about. We know that there's just more we can be doing because people tell us that, right?
Well, certainly it's more.
They tell us that when you knock on doors.
They don't tell us that they beg for it.
Right.
People are begging for government that works, government that is responsive.
Safe communities.
And leaders who are going to show
right.
up for them.
Do something about Medicaid and do something about I don't know if minimum wage, I never heard much about that, but I know in a lot of circles, people can't afford to live right now.
People.
And there are things we can do about that, right?
The cost of prescription drugs,
right.
People rationing medication. The list goes on.
Yeah, when I think about Milwaukee.
College affordability.
Yeah.
Student loan debt.
That too. So getting people to speak up is important. And getting people to take action like all of you being here is important. Okay. You have any questions for me? We'll just move on then. We'll just move on.
All right.
Okay. Do we have some questions from the audience? Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm reading about demographic change and the incredible numbers of young people and their levels of activity and things. And I'm wondering what you're finding both in the organizations and the family.
Yeah. Well, tell us about young people.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll say first big shout out to the youth of the state of Wisconsin. We had the highest youth vote turnout in the entire country last November. It was like 48.5%. So we have reasons to be optimistic. Young people in particular, see a rogue political party that is coming for their rights and also coming for their opportunity. Denying, student loan relief or, the right to make your own healthcare decisions, these constant, incessant attacks on LGBTQ youth, right? The list, it is ever growing. These are people
transgender.
Who have, that's what I'm, exactly. And these are, they see politicians who not just, not just politicians that don't have their interests, but politicians that are actively doing harm, and they're stepping up and they're responding in kind by voting.
Boy, that's what I'm hearing too. And Tyler Kelly, we did an interview with him on guns, and he was inspired by Parkland. It's so sad that kids are getting involved because they don't feel safe in their own schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so, every time I hear about children getting killed in Milwaukee, every week here now lately, I'm heartbroken because we can do so much about that.
I mean, it's kids all across the country that are experiencing
number
gun
one
violence.
Killer is, of children now is guns.
Yep.
So what can we do about that? You know, I just continue to look at the bigger picture of how can I plug into, and that's what you could look for too, is your places to plug into to create the kind of change you want to see. Mm-hmm. Because we're needed. You're all needed out there if we're going to have a better society.
Exactly.
And for everyone, the equality thing. One of the things I always have to fight for is handicap access. Mm-hmm. And most recently, Mandela, after fighting for 7 years or more, I worked with my local library. They don't have an elevator in the building. It's a two-story building, and they do programs on both levels. And I was like, well, this isn't right. So you know what I do? I get involved. I go to the committees. I serve on them to try to create change. And then nothing was happening after we even created this whole plan. It got thrown out by the village board. And I got tired of that, so I sued them. Because we have protections under the ADA.
Yeah.
And so we cannot sit back and let one village like that, and then contrast that to what's happening in Wauwatosa, which right now is putting an all-inclusive playground in one of the Milwaukee County parks, I believe, that's going to have sensory spaces, and it's going to be all ability focused. And you see these communities moving in the right direction, and here I live with a husband in a wheelchair, and they can't even fix the library because they didn't. Here's what I hear. You're going to love this. Just heard it last week from a community person, because when someone starts taking me on Facebook, I try to meet with them. I'm like, okay, let's get together. Can we get together? I don't even know who it was. Somebody was posting in this community page. I was like, do you want to meet? Well, yeah, okay. Let's meet at the library.
Oh, wow.
We met at the library. We did.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
No, I'm sorry. It was the Hales Corners community page. It wasn't just some random person. No, it was whoever runs the Hales Corners community
page.
Yeah,
all right, thanks
for getting
better.
Me to clear that up.
Yeah. That's better.
But I didn't know exactly who was behind it. I had a hunch. And it was a former village board member's son that was running it. So I'm like, do you want to meet at the library? Yeah, we did. So that's a public place. I felt perfectly safe doing that. And you know, after 2 hours of conversation, we parted, but I tried to approach him this way. Can we work together to fix this in Hales Corners rather than me having to fight and sue and all that stuff, right? But here's what he said. Here's the part, and I've heard it consistently from leaders in Hales Corners. Do you really think we should put in an elevator that'll affect this many people when we could maybe fix our pool and have all of those people? That's the thinking on some people's part, and we just have to challenge that and say, oh, so you think you should discriminate against this many people? I think the ADA is about serving this small group of people, right? It, the same goes for whether it's race, whether it's gender, whether it's... Our country is about serving everybody and freedom, right? The freedom to be who we are. So that's been my challenge, and you know, I'm going to keep that one up forever. So even though we lost, look at all the things we can do, huh, Mandela?
Yeah, you're making a case for Facebook. You're not making it with me.
Okay. Go on. Yes.
Hey.
So with all these problems that you mentioned, healthcare, women's right to vote, on how they plan their lives in terms of their healthcare and stuff, student debt relief, all those things. Yet every time I listen to the news and press, the narrative is focused on Agent Orange. It's a predominant narrative. They don't discuss any of the issues that we need to be solving in this country.
Good point.
You have a better pipeline into the Democratic Party than maybe are the boots on the ground people sometimes. So how is the Democratic Party changing? What's their game plan? What's their narrative? Change the focus and refocus people on major issues rather than focus on superficial legal cases which sell press and media but not actually solve any problems that the world, you know, the country and the extension of the world needs solving. I don't see that as a hope signal. I mean, it's sometimes too little too late. You know, we're getting into an election year, yet I see very little from the Democratic Party above changing the narrative and say, whoa, hang on, this is not important. The important thing are these issues, and this is what we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would push back a little bit, only in the sense that, you know, one, from our organization, that is what we are pushing. we are pushing what the administration has been doing, transformative legislation around the like Infrastructure Jobs Act, also Inflation Reduction Act specifically. But you started out mentioning, you know, dereliction of duty of the press when it comes to their, you know, when it comes to how much coverage the former president gets. If you recall, back in 2015, 2016, people talked about, yeah, he's bad, but he's good for ratings. And a lot of members of the press, a lot of press organizations, I should say, have not learned the lesson from what happened by, you know, looking at what is probably a decent business decision, but not one that's good or that bodes well for our democracy. And with that being said, it can be harder for either people who are looking to challenge him in a Republican primary or even Democratic Party to get messages out that are not independent of traditional media because of that very reason. So with that being said, I know that, you know, the tours that the president has been on, vice president has been on, you know, they're coming, or excuse me, vice president will be in state tomorrow talking about making some new announcements about projects they've been working on. And you know, it's tough when you do have a media apparatus that is fixated on one thing, because that is what has been getting people tuned in. Now, the thing about it as well, a lot of ratings are going down in a lot of on a cable news channel or cable news channels. But with that being said, the former president is an unfortunate moneymaker for them. And that's why it's important for us to have our outlets like Civic Media, being able to get this podcast, being able to show up door to door and talk about not just what we have been doing, but what's at stake with the next election and what we plan to do. And I do think that we have been talking about those things, and that's why we were successful this past spring. Even, you know, in my race, I think about the issues we talked about, you know, the poll that polls that came out the week before election had me down like 4 points. We closed that gap because we talked about the things that were important. We talked about every issue that you just named.
So I'm one second. I want to tag on to that, and then I have to end. We're near the end here, you guys. I'm so sorry. I just want to say there's like another level too of involvement of getting the right issues talked about, right? Getting them at the table so that we're not spending time on things that don't matter to people. And that is by you getting to pick up the phone call and calling your legislators, and you show up at those meetings that they have. I always put like Senator Bradley's on my calendar and Bob Donovan so that I can go and make sure my voice is heard. So I think we've got to try to control that agenda as well. And if enough people pick up that phone, I think. But also, I want to tell you my little hope from the Democratic. Let me finish one more thing. The Democratic. Yeah, but the Democratic Party, my experience was they had a plan, and that was to win the Supreme Court race, and that's where you get the power, and you get the lines redrawn. This is a long, slow process, you guys, of getting to that point where we have the power, and we can get the lines redrawn and get fair maps.
We have an election year coming up,
right.
And I'm not seeing enough narrative now to put the chess pieces in place so that people go out and feel confident about the issues that are going
to
be tackled.
We can talk more. I need to wrap this up, and then we can keep talking. It's just the official. I just need to thank everyone. We're going to continue this conversation in just a minute, but for Civic Media's purpose, I have to keep it under an hour so that we can manage this. But I want to thank all of you for coming. We're going to continue. The reason we're doing these in people's backyards is to continue these conversations and continue to build hope through these conversations, right?
Hey, I agree. And I appreciate you having me. I appreciate you doing this.
Well, thank you all. And thanks to our listeners who came. I hope that this gave you some idea of something you can do to make the world a better place. So thank you very much. We hope you enjoyed listening to Bird on a Wire on Civic Media and that you're inspired to take action on issues you care about. For more episodes, visit us at civicmedia.us. I'm Lou Ann Bird. Thanks for listening.